Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Steady Van Weva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Hans Williams.
I don't know why you chose someone who's not even in the movie we're talking about today.
It doesn't matter. He will forever be etched in our hearts.
What?
We are talking about the latest sequel to the wildly popular film out of Disney, and that is Frozen Part 2. We're going to be getting into that in a little bit, and needless to say, it's not going to be pretty. So,
The Filmlosophers podcast is letting it go, Eddie. And brought to you by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. Each Wednesday morning, find out how your kingdom is doing, then head on over and download the latest episodes on your favorite streaming platforms such as Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom.
Audio Boom and Pandora!
There you go.
All right, sorry, swung back.
When those nature spirits talk, sometimes you gotta double check if you're not going crazy. Connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101 so we can let you know if you are.
Because we know crazy.
Yeah, we're experts. Finally, rock out to a cheesy 80s rock ballad and head on over to our website. Check our entire list of episodes at filmlosophers.com.
That's right. Spence, we are almost at 200 episodes.
I know. It's crazy.
That is awesomely crazy. And we are so excited to be getting close to that mark because it's just one of those milestones you don't always hit every so often. So we're excited. But even more so, we are, well, Spence is excited. I'm not as excited to talk about.
I didn't tell you anything about what I think about this movie. You don't know.
No, I have no idea. And yes. I'm not excited at all. because we are talking about Frozen 2.
Yeah, he's been doing this for the past half hour.
I don't even know where to begin. Like, normally...
Well, a great place to begin is with the synopsis.
You know what? Just do it. Go ahead, whatever.
Set 3 years after the events of the first film, the story follows Elsa, Anna, Kristoff, Olaf, and Sven, who embarked on a journey beyond their kingdom of Arendelle in order to discover the origins of Elsa's magic powers and save their kingdom after a mysterious voice calls out to Elsa.
This should have been a TV movie. Like, you know what? With the return of directors Chris Buck and Jennifer Lee, veteran voice cast Kristen Bell, Idina Menzel, Josh Gad, Jonathan Groff, and Ciaran Hines return as their previous characters and are joined by newcomers Sterling K. Brown. Yes, that Sterling K. Brown from This Is Us. He's never really going to be known for anything other than This Is Us.
No.
I mean, he'll be known, but
he was in Black Panther.
Yeah, but no one's like, oh, yeah, that's so-and-so's dad.
What? I've never seen This Is Us, so I don't know what you're talking about.
But that's where we got to start.
What?
In This Is Us.
Oh, that was before Black Panther?
That was before Black Panther.
All right.
Oh, my gosh. Sterling K. Brown, Evan Rachel Wood, Alfred Molina, Martha Plimpton, Jason Ritter, Rachel Matthews, and Jeremy Sisto. On March 12, 2015, at Disney's annual meeting of shareholders in San Francisco, Bob Iger, John Lasseter, and actor Josh Gad, who is the voice of Olaf, officially announced a full-length sequel, Frozen 2, was in development at Disney, with Buck and Lee returning as directors and Del Vecchio returning as producer. Del Vecchio was the producer on the previous film, obviously. It's interesting that they word it as officially announced a full-length sequel because there were two shorts prior to this that were god-awful.
Remember the backlash from Olaf's Magic Christmas?
Yeah, because it was...
That was bad.
It was right before Coco. It played right before Coco. And I remember because Coco was incredible.
Yes, it was.
And I went to a screening for it, and then I went back to go see it again, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I feel bad for everybody who didn't go to the screening like I did, because at the movie screening, they didn't have it. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, cool. I'm good with this. This was wonderful. No short before it. I'm good. And then you come back to go see it in theaters again, and it's like this 20-something minute god-awful short film that adds more time as much as the trailers gave you.
It's
before
like,
the film.
No, see, because I had to go to the theaters to, like, watch it, I was there for, like, 40 to 50 minutes before the actual movie started.
Oh.
I was losing my mind in that theater.
Like, you were one of those people. Huh?
I was this close to writing an angry letter to Disney about their unethical practices. You can't hold people hostage to see your movie. That's unacceptable. Luckily for them, that movie was amazing, and I forgot about Olaf's Magic Christmas.
Thankfully, because if it wasn't amazing, I would have raised some heck and hell and all over the place in that theater. Well, been like, why is this in front of a movie that's already going to be 2 hours long?
Well, like, they did get backlash from that because they took out like 2 weeks later.
Yeah. just so you're aware.
I'm still mad about that.
No, I'm still mad about that. Like, Coco is one of my favorite Pixar films as of late. And the fact that I have to, I have to associate that horrendous short film with the release of that movie in theaters, I'm like, no. a couple parts of the numbers. The budget for this film was $150 million. Opening weekend on the 22nd, because it did have a limited release prior to on the 7th. In its opening weekend on the 22nd, this film reached a little over $130 million. Hmm. That is literally like 80% of its budget.
Yep.
That's insane. Like, it's crazy to see some of the budgets of some of these films and see how, like, all right, well, they're still working towards getting close. So they're like, I don't know, what is it like? Hobbs and Shaw was like in the 50s or something. I don't know. And they made like $17 million their opening weekend, which isn't bad for a film. I mean, it's not bad at all. However, you look at films that like come out of Marvel, you know, or especially just out of the House of Mouse altogether, and they're like, oh, we put in $200 million, $150. This new upcoming film that's coming out called Soul from Pixar, it looks incredible. You know the budget for this film is easily in like the $180, $190, close to $200 million. Hmm. And it's like, they're going to recoup that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, easily, they're going to recoup that. So we had a chance to check out this film. The film kind of dropped right before Thanksgiving break, and we wanted to give this film some breathing room so that way we could prepare ourselves for the aftermath. And even then,
basically, it was Eddie not wanting to go, and
I didn't. I really didn't.
Us running out of time.
Look,
there's one choice left. But like, there are no other choices. There's always Elsa.
Oh, my God. Don't say that. Here's the thing. And I'm probably going to hurt a lot of people's feelings. I don't really personally care. But, like, this Frozen franchise is one of the worst things to come out of Disney and Pixar.
Mm.
Like, I really feel like we would all be okay. Our lives, our cinematic lives, would be still just fine without this franchise in it. But the fact that this franchise is here and its ridiculous songs have inundated our everyday life with Letting It Go and Finishing Each Other's Sandwiches.
What?
It's in the songs in the first film.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I feel like this franchise has kind of taken over a lot of what people are recognizing as what are some of the finer points of the Disney House of Mouse.
I have a quick question for you.
Yeah.
Were you still working with kids when the first one came out?
No, thank God.
Okay, I was curious if that was part of the reason why.
No, or else I would remember that fresh hell. Like, because I think I left teaching in 2011 or 2012. I think it was 2012.
Yeah, I was pretty sure it was way before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And thankfully, this film came out the year after that.
Oh, year after? Oh, yeah. You dodged the bullet.
I dodged multiple bullets. Here's the thing. This movie, the first Frozen film, was only an hour and 42 minutes. The second film was only an hour and 43 minutes. Why did this feel like it was the longest Pixar film in all the universe?
This isn't a Pixar film.
It's a Disney movie, whatever.
There's a difference still.
Okay, you're right. It's a Disney film. It's not a Pixar film.
Right.
Either way, it comes out of the same place.
Yes.
It's like either you're eating dirt or you're eating food. Either way, it's coming out the same place. This is still the same dribble. This is the same dribble that you would get and you would hold accountable if it was either a Pixar film or a Disney film.
If this was a Pixar film, I'd have wildly different feelings about this.
But it's still coming out of Disney. It's not like Pixar is still owned by Apple.
I know.
Or it's its own company.
I know.
It's under the overwhelmingly...
Yeah, but Pixar has a different feel to it than Disney does.
Okay, I'll give you that.
That's the only reason why I would have different feelings about this.
I just... This movie messed me up. Like, the first film... So, thankfully, after getting out of teaching, I knew a lot of people who had kids. And I'm like, okay, this movie is like... You know, Vietnam type era torture kind of stuff. Like, this is the kind of stuff that they would play in front of you just to break you down every day. This was horrible stuff. And then they went and made a sequel. And I thought, I'll be frank with you.
Mm-hmm.
I thought with all the different people that were out there trying to come up with like film theories or their own hypothesis about what this film is about. Like, after Wreck-It Ralph or Ralph Breaks the Internet, and you saw all of the Disney princesses in one room and all that, and you're like, oh, maybe they might actually consider doing something like that with the next couple of, you know, movies with these princesses. Like, you don't know. I mean, maybe, you know, and then you started seeing...
No, nothing can touch the princess line.
No.
It is sacred!
Do you need a moment?
No.
It was one of those things where it's like the fact that they were able to put them all in like the Wreck-It Ralph film.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what if all these things that they're showing us in this new trailer for Frozen 2, what if like Elsa and Anna meet like, I don't know, Pocahontas or something? Or
how the heck would that work?
I don't know. Did they give you a country of origin when they crossed over into that big mist in the trailers?
Yeah.
And it literally looked like something out of Pocahontas.
Yeah, like when their dad was a kid, he mentioned he was reading some Dutch book.
Spencer, that was in the movie. I mean, in the trailers.
Oh,
in the trailers, they're showing like all this stuff with wind and all. I'm like, all the colors of the wind.
So how on earth would they cross the Atlantic?
Magic.
Oh, my God. Yeah, they're just going to run across the Atlantic with ice.
She's literally doing that in the trailer at the very beginning. It's like, it's a long run, but you'll get there eventually.
Years later.
Ah, you don't know. But, like, I honestly, okay, maybe not Pocahontas, but I was hoping, like, it would traverse into areas that were like, okay, we've already created this opportunity here. Let's see what else we can do in terms of creating more opportunities for our characters. Create more of that Pixar cinematic universe that we've been, you know, toying at and we've allowed a lot of our fans to play with.
Again, not a Pixar film.
No, but I'm sorry, not Pixar. The Disney theory about how Anna and Elsa's parents are actually Tarzan's parents and that they were on their way to go to...
Yeah, this movie just like throws that in the garbage.
So this is going to be a spoiler review because I don't think I can hold back.
No, I can tell you
can't. So... Let's go ahead. I've already gone through so many different... Well, just most of my expectations from, like, the first Frozen film. I was really hoping this film was going to deliver more than... I was hoping this film was going to deliver more in terms of upping the ante for what we've seen with Disney and doing in terms of, like, you know, bringing in more cohesive characters, maybe doing something different. I don't know. Maybe taking a page out of Pixar's book. Like, if at least that would have been great.
No, I'm ranting. Disney, they know best. So why would they bother listening to the lowly people at Pixar?
Because Pixar's bringing in the money.
It doesn't matter.
So what about you, Spence? What were some of your expectations? Apparently, you were dancing on cloud nine with this one.
No, I didn't say that either.
Whatever.
So I come at this from a very different viewpoint. I don't have kids or know too many people with kids. So when the first movie came out, it just kind of came and went. And I heard some low rumblings about letting it go, but had no real idea what they were talking about. And that was pretty much it.
Lucky.
Yeah. So, like, a few years after it, I, like, saw the movie, and I was like, oh, this is, I don't get why people hate this so much.
You but, actually liked the first one?
Yeah, it's fine.
You actually liked the first film?
Yeah. Except for Olaf. I could deal without him. Like, if you took him out of the movie, I thought it would have been much better.
Oh, wow. That's controversial, because a lot of people, the whole reason why they're actually, well, to some fans, the whole reason why they're into this film franchise is because of him.
Okay, so, again, this could be skewing my whole interpretation of it. Olaf's Magic Christmas is my first, like, viewing of the Frozen world.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I saw it in the order of Olaf's Magic Christmas, then Frozen, then Frozen 2. So I was done with him before the movie started. That's probably what, like, that's my own skew because of that.
Uh-huh.
But, like, no. Dude, you came out, like, yesterday. Just get... You've already got Sven. He's a perfect fill-in. Especially with the whole, like, cutesy thing him and Kristoff do. That's perfect. You're already set.
Yeah, Kristoff being the crazy cat lady in this movie.
I kind of really like that because it's so weird.
It's beyond weird.
Yeah, so that was kind of my, you know, where I'm coming from. And so coming into this movie, I was like, okay, so I expect a hit song with Idina Menzel because, of course.
Uh-huh.
But other than that, I really didn't know where they were going with this. Because, like, running into an ocean making ice and then being in a forest with fall leaves, it's hard to connect dots
with
that.
Yeah, no joke. And and you got upset at me for thinking, oh, Pocahontas, like, oh, that's stupid. What are you talking about? Like,
I didn't think Pocahontas was going to show up.
You know what? Anything's possible. I mean, you don't know. They fit a Mickey Mouse head into every single film. Why not fit someone else in there?
Okay, but here's the thing, though. I don't think Disney has ever before had their properties cross in such a way where there wasn't, like, some background reason. Like, by having, like, these girls meet Pocahontas, that puts them on the same plane in the real world. It made sense in Wreck-It Ralph because, like, they could do whatever there, and that's just...
Do you not remember the scene from Pocahontas where, like, Pocahontas literally glides on the wind? Like, how can that not be in the same universe? There's a scene in the film where Pocahontas does just that. Why is this not being talked about? This is horrible. It's like everybody focuses on Anna and Elsa, whom... Okay, we're going to get to this because I got some issues with this film.
Let's go.
All right, so jumping into the film, like I said, spoiler alert, we've got spoilers. If you haven't seen the film, go ahead and hit pause right here. We're going to jump right into it. Soon after, so we'll give you a second to quickly pause the show. Before...
Yeah, because I'm sure our listeners are hardcore Frozen fans.
Oh, heck yeah. So first impressions after the film. I hated this film. Like, everything about this movie just echoed how much they were like, meh, we don't need to render that. Meh, we're good with that. Like, there were scenes where her feet looked horrible in this movie.
Why are you looking at her feet?
Because they show her feet. They're filming her feet. Her feet are in the frame. What am I supposed to think? Oh, yeah, they look like balloons. It's Baymax on 2 feet. Like, what am I supposed to think? Her feet looked so unrendered. They look like rubber. Some parts of her face while she's riding on the Kelpie looked really bad. There were parts where I'm like, does everybody in this godforsaken town have freckles? Because it's like they took the same template and just threw it on everybody's face. I don't remember, like...
Isn't that a genetic thing? Doesn't that happen when you have a
Happened with what?
Gene pool type thing.
So what, are they all related? Is this like some kind of backwoods Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back kind of situation here? What are we doing? Okay. Like people making out with their brothers like, hey, ding, 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 ding.
I most certainly did not say that. I was just saying, you know.
What? What are you trying to say?
When you have a limited gene pool, you're going to see a lot of recurring traits. Aren't freckles like a genetic thing?
I don't know.
Okay.
But they all have the same spatter pattern on their face. I'm like,
I just assumed that's what it was, and that's what they were suggesting.
So you're saying they're related?
Well,
this is getting to more like the backwoods of like some, I'm not even going to pick a state because knowing us, if we have a listener in that state, we'll probably get in trouble. I don't know. Some like kind of inbred type of situation here. Is that what you're implying?
I'm just saying it's not inbred because there's like a couple hundred people in this town. But I'm saying.
So you're saying what? Somebody's got to be related to
I'm
somebody.
I'm saying when you have a lack of diversity, you have a lot of recurring traits.
You're really like circling the drain here before you get
what
to
what are you talking about?
What are you trying to say?
I'm saying.
You're like. Are they? Well, I'm not saying they're related, but there's only a few people in this town. Well, what are you saying? Are they related? I'm not saying they're related, but it is genetic.
Yeah, I'm saying like, they're probably not related. I'm just saying there's not that much diversity among the people in the town.
So what does that mean, though? Because
that means there's not that much diversity around the
well,
people in
obviously,
the town.
Obviously, but if she has freckles,
uh-huh,
and he has freckles, and Elsa has freckles, does that mean that Kristoff is like somehow related in some distant way to them?
Probably.
So that's what I was getting at. I'm
but
like,
they're not.
I'm not saying they're brother and sister,
though.
But it's like.
There's a difference between inbreeding and
my
a lack of.
This is my second cousin. We've been dating for a while now. Look at our boy Bubba. He's got two legs and four arms. And
yes, that's actually exactly what I'm trying to say. I'm saying they're close enough for that. I'm saying
you're taking a long way around to get to the same destination. Just say it.
I'm saying they're
go ahead. They're genetically close to each other,
they
which
are.
Is another way to say they're slightly related. You could just say it.
I'm not saying they're like, you know,
go
oh,
ahead.
That's
what?
My cousin.
They're not. We're not saying they're cousins. They just share uncles. That's a-
Oh, gosh.
That lifted my spirit.
Wow, incest lifts your spirit.
No, the fact that there's other bad parts that I didn't even see about this movie that you're really highlighting. I think the biggest thing for me was, like, why the heck do, like, the natives of the land have to play, like, second fiddle? Like, we literally saw the natives of that land be in there just as a placeholder.
Yeah.
They were there to be like, hey, we live off the land. We go now. And that was it. Like, there was nothing else after that.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's a little backwards thinking, speaking of. Because it's like, here, okay, I'm gonna really kind of boil it down.
Okay.
Disney has been pushing this whole agenda that, like, oh, we're being super culturally diverse. We're integrating all these different things. Don't you see what we're doing? We're giving, you know, what we've been saying we're doing. We're giving people things that they've been wanting, they've been asking for. You now don't just have a princess who, you know, is white and, you know, is over here, or a princess is this, is that. We're bringing you this, we're bringing that. Okay. So what I've learned from Disney within the last 15 years is that if you are not a princess, if you are a princess of color, it's because either A, you had to work two or three jobs and find a man in the most unlikely of ways. It's like literally the equivalent of like like a group internet chat room. Because they didn't know who each other were. And then she ultimately still needed a white savior with the other girl kissing him to turn him into a prince. And I'm talking about The Princess and the Frog, which is a Disney film.
Yes.
Pointing at you.
it's not that hard to keep track.
Oh, I don't know. You've barely just seen Frozen, so I don't know. Or like, and I know this isn't a, this is a, is it a Pixar film? Which what one? Is Coco?
Coco?
Coco's a Pixar film.
Yeah.
But still coming out of Disney, that cultural, culture and diversity, like bringing in somebody who, okay, he's a key character in this film, but he's a shoe shiner. He's a shoemaker. He's a lowly kid who has aspirations to be a guitarist and a singer, and yet he can't, his family can't even afford to give him a decent guitar. He has to make everything he has, and the only time he can see true family that connects with him is when he goes to the underworld. Is that what I'm gathering? Like, there's no just clear cut and dry, like, hey, let's make a prince or a princess just be a straight person of color. Not a straight person, but like just a person of color that doesn't have to like have some type of addition to his character, you know? Like, why can't we have a princess of color who doesn't have to work her butt off just to get to that place? What if she's just, I don't know, there's a possibility of like people of color just already being born affluent, or hey, maybe just being already in a place where they don't have to worry about money. I mean, I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but to be quite frank, it's a normal thing to say. Like, you, Spencer, you're a person of color.
Yeah.
I don't see you, like, if someone were to make a movie about you, they're not going to be like, oh, well, Spencer's going to be the key person. They're going to make an animated film of you. They're not going to make you with, like, all these extra jobs, and you got to work extra hard, and, you know, you face this, this, and that every day because you just, you're trying to make your daddy proud or whatever. Like, it's
all right.
Well, that's what it was in Princess and the Frog. She was trying to make her dad proud by buying that place.
Mm-hmm.
It just, I feel like that's kind of like the niche for any person of character, any character of color in any of these Disney films. Like, you got to have that, like, not crutch, but just like subplot to yourself. And it kind of stinks because in this one, it's literally like there's nothing wrong with them. There is nothing wrong with these people. They're fine. They're hunky-dory.
Yeah.
It's outside sources that are affecting their home, causing them to leave Arendelle and causing them to go and try to fix the solution, which fixing the solution means they have to travel where no one else can travel to this land where these, all these people of color, which not just the natives, but also even the King's Guard who were left behind, led by a person of color, played by Sterling K. Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, I would have enjoyed this movie a little bit more if the people of color had a bigger role, other than just helping connect the dots.
Right.
Because in all honesty, this felt like, you know, Elsa came to be the white savior of the day.
She did.
No, that's what I'm saying.
I'm going to be really honest.
Yeah.
Like, when I saw Sterling K. Brown's character, I was like, wait, there's black people in Arendelle? Since when?
Because I feel like he got left over the other side.
I feel like I hadn't seen that before. Maybe I just hadn't seen the movie in a long time, and maybe that's
No. I don't remember a person of color unless they came in by ship in the first film. And I mean that not in the, like, bad way, but
whenever you say like people of color and ships, it's always bad.
Because they opened the gates of the kingdom in the first film and people were coming by boats to visit the kingdom. I don't mean brought to I didn't mean it like that, just so we're clear. But I mean, still, like, where is any of the diversity? Because let's be honest, there's diversity in this part of the country during that time. Like, there had to have been. And if you're going to perpetuate that at a time like this, everybody was white. Everybody was Caucasian. Everybody was, like, as transparent as Elsa. Because that girl needs sunblock. I'm surprised she can even walk out of the house. It's like, then make it, you know? Like, create that. Why perpetuate this, like, oh, well, you know, this is a what's the name of that author? The Danish author? I don't remember his name. The one, so the, they notated. Oh, they mentioned it in the movie. He's the king when he's a little boy. They do a flashback and they're like, hey, what are you reading? He's like, oh, some Danish author, Hans Christian Andersen, who's the person who actually wrote long ago the actual story, The Snow Queen, to which this film is based on.
Oh.
As well, he also wrote The Little Mermaid and a few others. But the fact that during this time, like, everybody who's there is white, and then here's, and it'd be one thing if it was like, all right, everybody's white, whatever, fine, this is what you want to do, you do you. But here's the bad part about it all. Here's like the kick to the nether regions. Then they come back to Arendelle, and they're like, they in the second film as well as like throughout the film, and they're like, oh, by the way, unbeknownst to you, there's been a person of color under your nose the entire time. And it's like, wait, why was this a secret? Like, if so, spoiler alert, you come to find out. So I know we're rambling on. The film is essentially about the dad telling the little girls when they're young about this ancient forest that gets blocked off because of a bad war between his kingdom and them. Something happens. The nature spirits cut everything off. Elsa hears voices. Follows the voices. Never do that, please. Follows the voices. Ends up on that enchanted forest. Is able to access it with her friends and family. Goes through. They try to fix everything. Blah, blah, blah. Why do they only mention it now? Or why do they only, like, hint at it that you find out the mother of Anna and Elsa is actually a native from the people who live in the forest, which, if you look at the people in the forest, they their color, like their skin tone, is drastically different.
Yeah, than I was Anna like, when they said that, I was like, I started looking at everyone. I was like, wait, I'm trying to find like facial features that could possibly be like, you know, from that mom. But like, I was like, she seems like she wouldn't fit in.
Well, because she seems like she's not.
Yeah,
like. That's baloney for me. It's like, oh, well, what you don't know is she's darker than everybody else. You just don't, like, they literally made this whole thing about her like being native to those people, and it's like, no, like, I don't know if you've ever seen Misery.
Yeah.
So
That movie's great.
That's a wonderful movie. The scene where Kathy Bates is talking about the serials, the short films that they showed in the theaters, and she would go every week, and she goes, I went, and I saw, you know, they were doing this, and then the hero of the cowboy, whatever, the hero was in the train, and then the train goes off the cliff, and it goes down, and it erupts in a ball of fire, and I go next week, because I want to be front in line, and I go and see, and of course, they started at the tail end of the other one, and as it's going over, you see the cowboy jump out, and everybody cheers. She goes, but not me. I got up and said, he never got out of the cock-a-doodie car, and I'm like, that's exactly the same way I feel about this film. Like,
I'm going to stop you. When you have to say, I was like Kathy Bates in Misery, that's not a good start.
And? in terms of that sentiment of that scene, it's like, I really would have liked to have seen the breadcrumbs start back at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
With the first film. If the first film would have been like, oh yeah, by the way, you notice like mom's a little darker than the other ones, or maybe there's like something different about mom, or maybe mom, yeah, I don't know, wears something unique other than a very general scarf that she passes down to her kids.
It had snowflake patterns. Very special.
They live in the mountains. Like, that's like as about as generic as, oh, I got this sweater with the sun because I'm in California. Like, it's like, it makes no sense. And this is one of those situations where I'm like, you know what? I wish that this particular story would have started back at the beginning. And it really does take away from the story, like, plain and simple. Like, I was really hoping that since they were going to be bringing in other elements or even forms of stuff that was going to be like in a forest, other people, there was like natives in this one, blah, blah, blah. Like it was going to be an integration. Like we were going to see an opportunity for people to show that not everybody needs a white savior.
Mm-hmm.
And it sucks that I have to put it that way, but that's the way it's been placed. Like the way this film ends, Anna comes riding in on a crystal clear horse, a Kelpie, on this gigantic wave as it's swarming towards Arendelle and like does the whole Superman thing and puts her hand out and like stops the whole thing in its tracks and whatever. It's like, yeah, I guess. Because it feels so expected. Like everything about this movie, I honestly knew was going to happen from the get-go.
Yeah.
There's nothing in this movie that is not broadcasted earlier on, and you're like, oh, well, that took me for a surprise. Like, everything. Okay, except for one thing. I have to admit, the scene with Christoph doing his little 80s power ballad. So in the film, Christoph is trying to find a way to propose to Anna, mm-hmm. but Anna is so preoccupied with taking care of Elsa, making sure she's okay, that she barely notices all the attempts that he makes at trying to propose. And Christoph, as the boyfriend that everybody wishes they had, is like, I'll be patient, I'll wait, I'll whatever. And at one point, he tries this big old gesture to like woo her over. This movie's starting to bring down my brain cell count. Uh-huh. It ends up falling apart, and he has this whole like 80s power ballad moment where he's essentially going to wait for her, and he's going to keep trying. Should he keep following her? And mind you, the song's interesting in itself. Like the words, it's whatever. It's the clip itself.
Yeah.
Like this clip takes a page out of everything from Sting to Journey to
the point where you feel like you've heard this song before almost.
Yeah. 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 Like 100%. Every part of this song, I was like, I think that's a song.
Yeah. Like I was listening to this. I was like, I feel like I've heard, like not in a bad way, like I've heard this, but like it reminds you so much of like those 80 power ballads that you feel like you've heard it before. And it's kind of crazy.
It really is. And it's like, I know I've heard most of these songs, and it's like the basic structure, and not just the basic structure, but the way it's being presented, like the whole two people, one, you see the person in his full body, and then you got this like superimposed head facing the other direction.
That's good.
And then the whole queen, you see all the heads in black, like in that black backdrop.
Of a bunch of reindeer singing along.
This was like,
I'm going to be honest. It was my favorite part of the movie. It was the thing I liked the most.
It was the one thing that I tolerated mm-hmm. the best. Like everything else was like, I really wished I could have left earlier. But the fact that I had a whole like pepperoni and cheese pizza in my lap still.
Okay, that you can take that with you.
Yeah, but then I'd have to like maneuver the box, and you know how those boxes are in the theater. It's like just once once you open it, you can't close it.
Yes, you can.
You can't. No, mm-hmm. it's like trying to put like a lock back on like in the dark, and it was dark. I don't feel like this song, this particular scene, really hurt me as much as like the rest of the movie did. But it really did. It had everything, like I said, from like Queen to like, you know, to Sting to Kenny Loggins to everything. Like you could feel the 80s oozing out of this.
Yeah.
And it's appreciated. I'll give it that. I mean,
that's as close as you're going to get to a compliment movie.
Yeah. Cause this whole movie was just, I don't know. Like everything about it, from a visual standpoint to a story element, the story was so generic. I felt like, and I'm probably going to hurt somebody's feelings, but like Josh Gad in this film, completely unnecessary. Like,
I've been saying that about all of his performances, like, as Olaf.
Like, mind you, yes, some of his, like, his reenactments of the story and whatnot, it was cute, but
I was like, wait, they watched him reenact Frozen right then and there? That seems like a lot.
It was. And, like, Sterling K. Brown kind of overdoing it a little bit, like, what? Anna, no. And, like, it's like, Sterling, you're better than that.
Yeah, you
it's
can like, sit down.
Go back to Jack.
You're fine.
Go back to Jack.
I don't know what that means.
Jack is the name of the dad, and this is us. But, like, I really feel like Olaf kind of just is run its course in all of Disney. Like, I really don't think there's much more of a place for that particular character to really fit into this structure.
They're not going to kill him off, so they have to
keep they literally came close this time.
Disney will always come close, but never actually, unless you're someone's mother. Okay? That's how it works. It's like Disney law.
So Olaf has to have kids first before he actually gets killed. Is that
maybe.
What you're saying?
He's in the maybe pile at that point.
I mean, because he's not necessarily have a gender, so he could reproduce asexually.
I don't want to think about snowmen reproducing. So,
well, asexual reproduction is just.
I don't. We're going into a place I don't want to go to.
It just means that they.
Ryzen!
Oi. All right.
Okay, but like, okay. So, some of my feelings about this movie.
Uh-huh.
I don't feel like I fundamentally understand this movie.
I don't think anybody does.
Because, like, things happen, but I don't understand why they happened. For instance, this whole thing kicks off because Elsa starts hearing a voice. Why did she start hearing this voice all of a sudden? Also, like, slightly after the townspeople get kicked out of the town because of all the spirits there, she's like, I woke up all the spirits. I was like, when did she do that? Was that whole song she was singing? Why did that song wake up all the spirits?
Because it was Idina Menzel, and she's just past her prime. Like, wow. I'm going to be quite frank.
Wow.
Like, you could hear, as an audio engineer, somebody who works with audio here most of the time and whatnot, you could hear when that auto-tune kicked in. I'm sorry, Idina. She had a great run with Wicked and maybe Wicked and Rent. And she could never reproduce that Frozen song again. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen any of her live performances of the song she did from the first one.
No.
But, like, the live performances are god-awful. Like, she can't do it. And I know in this one, she had a lot of help. So, I'm not saying she used auto-tune. I'm just saying she used auto-tune. And,
wow.
Like, you could hear it, though. You could hear it in her voice. She's, like, totally done with this character. Like, it sounded like she was talking in the role, like, in the booth, and then at some point she was like, oh, yeah, Anna, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, wait a second, where'd her voice go? She, like, moved away from the mic or something. And it seemed like she wasn't fully there. And I think that's one of the things that they did with this particular film is try to help write her out of the main storyline, or at least write her out of being consistently in the main storyline. I don't know. Like, Idina Menzel, I think, needs to go to teaching, or maybe, like, I don't know, New Year's Eve, like, appearances.
Because that's what we put all of our singers who are out to pastor.
Or, I mean, maybe senior citizen home appearances.
Wow, that's just
daytime TV. Daytime TV, there you go.
So harsh.
Give her own sitcom. Just don't let her sing.
Just like, call it Idina. And then
Idina and me. And it's like Idina Menzel and, like, I don't know who else is failing. Jonathan Taylor Thomas. I don't know. Like,
Why would you put those two people together?
Because it doesn't make any sense to keep putting her into any more movies. I feel like she's done.
Okay.
Like, or at least with this franchise. Like, I don't know. Who knows?
Okay, I feel like you're becoming a little manic over there with your hatred for this movie.
This movie really put me in a bad place. I literally was doing fine. I was frustrated at work. Mm-hmm. I got out of work and went to this theater. I got frustrated when I got out of the theater. I'm like, I need something. And so that's why I got me a Sonic. It was happy hour for Sonic drinks. I got me a cherry limeade Route 44.
Okay. I didn't like, I can't say I hated this movie, but I was more of confused as why this was something Disney wanted to make. Because I don't, like, honestly, I don't really get it. Like, this movie's kind of really meh for me.
I feel like this movie took the place of what so many other movies could have done. You know? Like, I feel like this movie could have really stepped aside for something bigger, you know, like something better, or even maybe like a scooting up like the release date for like that new one, the Soul movie, or I don't know, anything at all, anything. But, you know, this movie, only thing that this movie did well was further perpetuate the mindset that Disney hasn't learned anything yet. And it's sad because as you and I, as people of color, let's just be honest, aside from The Jungle Book or I don't know, the Robin Hood animated movie or Zootopia, like there's not many people of character who strongly are hailed as the hero or as the main characters in a lot of Disney films.
Yeah, people of color, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I mean people of color, like, obviously, like, in Robin Hood, they're supposed to represent people of color, and there's different shades of people in this film because they're different animals. And it's like, okay, I can see the representation there. I could probably draw from that. That's cool. The last film where Disney proper, not Disney Pixar, not Disney Marvel, the last film where Disney had a character, the last two movies that Disney had a film where the characters, the main characters, were actually people of color was The Princess and the Frog and Song of the South. Let's just be quite frank.
No, Pocahontas still counts.
True. Yeah, no, actually, okay, but last three.
Does have the white savior thing.
It still has the white savior thing. It for me, this movie didn't really lend any help to Disney's overall argument. And I feel like, you know, if this doesn't get recognized or noticed, I feel like it's going to get swept under the rug, like a lot of the other things that this massive conglomerate has done. And people are still going to, like, pay into this. It's like, okay, well, you know, little girls of color will still have Tiana or Mulan or whatever. And it's like, yeah, but that's one.
Yeah.
Like, you have one Asian princess or character. I don't know if you want to consider her a princess. You have one African-American princess who had to work to get to that place. And then even then, when she met her prince, it wasn't until after she got married with him and they kissed did she become somebody of unique status. It's like, oh, okay. And then you have Pocahontas, which she got the right end of that deal. Let's be honest. Yeah. There's nobody. And it's kind of disheartening. Because I know for both of us, we've both grew up with this franchise. And to be honest, there's really not any other franchise out there that produces stuff like this on a daily basis, right, or at least on a regular basis. Don Bluth was probably the only man who put the gloves up and went toe-to-toe with Disney.
And did well for a while.
And he did do well for a while. In fact, I prefer a lot of his films that he's done over some of its Disney counterparts, like some of the other films that came out that same year. Mm-hmm. I mean, how can anybody say no to The Land Before Time? Incredible film. Fievel Goes West, or An American Tale, the first one. You know, a lot of those Don Bluth films are just phenomenal. And they were great for the time. Sadly, Don Bluth just eventually kept getting pushed out more and more and more and more. And it is what it is. But it's like, Disney has a responsibility, in my personal opinion. Disney has a responsibility to show that not every Disney princess has to have pale skin and be affluent, or pale skin or white skin and save people who are not of the same skin color every time. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is something that needs to be addressed. You know?
It's kind of way past time.
Beyond way past time. I agree. It's just sad. Like, this film could have been that. I think is kind of what I'm taking the long way around. I'm doing the Spence and going the long way around to getting to what I'm trying to say. This film could have been that. This could have been a great opportunity to showcase what Disney has learned thus far. Creating characters who, outside of what everybody has already seen, could show they're capable of solving problems too, and they are people of color. You know, that tribe didn't need to be saved. It didn't need anybody to come in and be a white savior. And Elsa didn't allow anybody else to be a part of that. She took it upon herself. And her and her sister both came in tag team back again and took over and did whatever they did, saving everybody. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think, Spence? Because I think I'm rambling.
About what specifically? The movie in general or about...
The movie in general. Just take over. Take my microphone.
Okay. No, I'm just constantly brought back to pieces of the movie I don't really get or understand why they happened. And maybe you can explain it to me.
What?
Okay, so there's a part of the movie where, like, Elsa goes to, like, this frozen glacier and, like, learns a whole bunch of secrets about what actually happened.
Uh-huh.
And then she becomes frozen from going too deep?
Going too far.
Okay, but why is that too far?
I don't know. That's a great question. Like, the nature of spirits wanted her to learn this, but when she actually learns it, she gets punished for it.
Yeah, like, and then also, who's punishing her for this? Because I thought she found out she's the frozen spirit.
She's the bridge between all these other different spirits.
Which doesn't make any sense. Why is ice the bridge between fire, earth, water, and wind?
This feels like the explanation that Lilo gives in Lilo gives in The Fifth Element. What did she say? Fire burns, wind blows. it didn't make any sense at all. Yeah. And her becoming that middle thing just adds to, like, why her?
Yeah.
Like, why couldn't it have been, like, one of the little girls in the tribe? Or anybody else? Why couldn't it have been Sterling K. Brown's character? He spent the most time in that place. Like, what the heck? Like, anybody else. Why did it have to be an awakening of her when there were so many other people that you could reintroduce into the story to show them being the unique character?
Right. Well, like, the thing about this movie is I don't... Like, I feel like this movie kind
of... This movie stunk.
Yeah, it kind of does. But I feel like also this movie shouldn't really exist on its own virtue because... When the main crux of this, the problem of the movie is that the old king of Arendelle, not like Elsa and Anna's grandfather, has erected a dam, and that dam is killing the forest. And the leader of the other tribe knew this and was going to talk to him about it, but then he was killed by the king, and there was a war, and then the spirits got in the way and stopped everyone for some reason.
The spirits were not happy.
Yeah, they weren't, but it seems like most of the reason they weren't happy was because of the dam. And so if these tribe listens when the spirits talk, why did they not know that the dam needed to go?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand.
Like,
why
who were they
that.
Listening to?
Yeah, because it seems like you're just being high and mighty and not actually listening.
Yeah.
In fact.
And the fact that they get all crazy and whatever, and like they talk about listening to the spirits. When this lizard that catches fire runs through the entire place and is like, which I'm assuming is like the fire spirit.
I assume so as well.
Runs through and they're like, oh, we listen to the spirits when they talk, and then they get scared or whatever. I'm like, that was a lizard. Like, what couldn't you fix with a pail of water that Elsa did, like, in less than the time it took for you to figure out it was a lizard? Like, she literally cornered the thing and then gave it ice, like gave it a cool place so that it could put out its fire. Like that's literally all she did.
Yeah, that is correct.
And at no point in time did this lizard ever show hyper intelligence of like, I speak to the tribe and I tell them to do things. And like, it seemed like if they were following that lizard, they were in bad shape.
Yeah.
So them making the director or the writer, whoever did this creative direction for this film, them deciding to make the native people like very needing guidance, like they were incapable of being successful on their own.
Yeah.
It seemed like that was a really big jab to what was going on or what could have been in this whole film. I don't know. This film just like, it's literally giving me a headache just talking about it.
That's because you're having an aneurysm.
That's because this movie gives me an aneurysm. Honestly, this film needed to go straight to DVD or even on Disney Plus. It could have been like a Disney Plus.
I don't understand why it wasn't like the Disney Plus. Like, also Frozen 2.
Yeah, like, it's like, well, we're getting like all these Marvel films and all there, and we got Lady and the Tramp on there, and I'm like, why didn't this just join those? Like, why not? I honestly don't know, and I personally just do not care about this franchise anymore. I really do hope this is the last one. I really hope they don't come out with another short film. Quote unquote, air quotes, short film.
There's going to be another short film. Olaf and Sven's magical adventure.
Like, I'm going to, you know what? I really hope heads will roll if they try to come out with, like, oh, get the tribe playset where all the members are led by Elsa, who at the end of the film, Elsa actually feels like she has to stay behind with the tribe to, quote unquote, guide them and help them.
It doesn't make any sense. How dare you? That doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Like, one person invited you, not the whole tribe. You don't deserve to be over here. You're not the queen anymore. Which, mind you, spoiler alert, she gives up her crown to Anna, and Anna becomes a new queen, and Elsa's like, I'm going to be free in the woods, and I'm going to go and walk barefoot, and me and my horsey are going to go run around.
Yeah, also, like, you can't keep like things in eternal winter. Like, how are they gonna get food? You need to grow crops and do things.
This movie is bad.
Also, how are they growing food and doing things and growing crops? These people said they hadn't seen the sky in 34 years. How does that work? You're gonna have a vitamin D deficiency.
They shouldn't have been as dark as they were.
No.
Like, they all should have been pale albinos.
Yeah.
Even Sterling K. Brown's character. Like, they all should have had seriously light skin. I just really, really didn't like this movie. Any last thoughts before we wrap this thing up? Because, in all honesty, I don't know if there's much else I can say.
Most of the songs in this movie were, like, very generic sounding, and there's too many of them.
I didn't like any of Idina Menzel's songs, for reasons I've already stated.
Doesn't she only have one?
I think she has two.
Oh.
Well, either way, she wasn't great. And I think both of Kristen Bell's songs were seriously on the nose. It's like, we get it, you're lamenting. We get it, you gotta keep pushing forward.
Yeah, you know, there is this thing where you can just show people what you're trying to do without telling them.
Yeah.
Especially.
It's called acting.
Yeah.
Like,
just do it. You can show a sad girl and get, oh, she's sad because she thinks her sister's dead. And, like, she doesn't need a pep-up song. You can do that all with facial expressions. Have her be distraught. Have her walk a little. Have her almost break down and cry. Have her just stand there for a second and think. Then have her just pick her head up and, like, march straight out that door. Like, you can get the whole thing without a song. I just got it right there, and I made it happen.
And it was literally in less than like 5 to 10 seconds. Like, yeah, that could have been explained. But no, she's got a whole 3.5-4 minute song about how she's lost people and it's so hard, but she's gotta push through because she's gotta get going and move forward. And it's like, oh my gosh, No. Like, the whole thing was just doing the most. I really do hope, and I know people are probably not going to be happy with this, but I really do hope they don't bring back Olaf. I just hope they don't bring back this franchise. Plain and simple. This franchise was in the beginning bad. It still is. This needs to go. Like, if this is the direction Disney's going, just bring in the American Invaders and let them just do what they're going to do.
That doesn't even make any sense.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure they're going to fit it in there somewhere. Let them come in and just take over, or have Merida and her people come in and take over the land. I don't know. Whatever they're going to do, just let them do it so that way we can get on with our lives and stop hearing. Like, I haven't listened that well, but I don't think any of these songs were memorable enough that kids are going to be re-singing them. So here's to hoping. But you never know.
Yeah, Into the Unknown is no Let It Go. So I think most people are safe.
Thankfully. Yeah, so kind of wrapping this whole thing up. Let's go ahead. I'll let you start, Spence. Does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles? Can't you just hear the excitement in my
voice? It just goes back into what does passing or failing mean? And I guess this movie fails to tell, like, a really cohesive story.
Oh, man, you think.
It just doesn't. Like, I walked out with, like, a lot of, like, mechanical questions on, like, how does this work? Like, because I don't get it. And so it was just really meh for me. Like, meh. Uh-huh. So, let's see. I'll give it 1.5 stars or monocles.
1.5 monocles.
And that is almost a majority that 80s power ballad.
Okay.
I'm gonna be real honest. I really like that song. Just the combination of the music and the visuals really worked for me. That's all I got.
Okay, cool. the film fails for me. It's unnecessary. It's completely out of any type of moral context that it should be. Like, it should be more focused on what Disney is really doing to try to grow and learn and be more progressive. And this film is definitely not a reflection of that. Or maybe it is. It's a reflection of exactly where Disney is at. I don't know. This film fails for me, and I'm going to have to give it a 0.25 monocle. That song was just barely good enough for me to even make it off of the jump. But this film overall just needed to go. I really didn't have any kind of a good time. I tried. I really did. But the moment that it's like Elsa's hearing voices and doesn't want to see a doctor and decides she's going to go and explore this on her own, it's like, no. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that about wraps up another awesome episode. Thank God. That about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out at our website at filmlosophers.com or on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers, on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101, and on Instagram at filmlosophy101. We got some great stuff in store. As you may know, we mentioned it last week. We got a trivia night coming up. It is actually going to be on December 16th here in Sacramento in the Northern California area. We will be doing a whole Star Wars trivia extravaganza. So if you get a chance, come on down, check it out, be a part of the fun. We'd love to see you there. We've actually posted the event invite on our page. So if you head over there to our Facebook page, you'll be able to see that and get more information. Right, Spence?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this movie just... I'm still messed up on this. But it's okay, because you know what? God willing, you know, Disney will learn from their mistakes.
Eventually. And how long will that take? We'll find out.
How long ago was it when they made Song of the South?
So that's... what, 80
so another years? 80 years? Okay. We got another 80 years to prove.
Actually, I think it might be 90. Ugh. Well, good luck to all you kids out there in the year 2105.
And good luck to all the parents that are stuck having to take their kids to this movie right now. So, from all of us here at The Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.